Hey everybody, this is Sophia Nelson. Happy St. Patty's Day. Welcome to the Redefining Freedom podcast. Today we're going to talk about Georgia on my mind, Georgia on all of our minds. Judge McAfee ruled that DA Fani Willis could stay on the case, but she didn't leave without being scathed deeply and had to let Nathan Wade go. I thought he gave a gracious resignation. If you haven't caught up, please do before you listen to the podcast. And happy Women's History Month. We're going to dig into Georgia. What happens next, and what is all of this doing to our form of governance, this republic, our checks and balances? It looks like the courts right now have a lot of power. Let's talk about it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Redefining Freedom podcast. It is Women's History Month, so shout out to all the ladies out there across the country and across the globe who are doing amazing things in the name of democracy, freedom, reproductive freedom, rights, rights for women and girls, and really creating a better, safer world for women and girls. Thank you for all you do, and particularly for those women here in the United States who are elected to the Senate, to the House, to governorship and state legislatures, all across the country. Thank you for your service. Regardless of your party, it's not easy work. It's often thankless work. And we just want to give you a shout out here on Women's History Month and let you know that we appreciate all the great work that you're doing to make your country a better, fairer, more equal, more inclusive of everybody, not just some of us, but all of us. And that means everybody. And I thank you for the way women lead with emotional intelligence. Those soft skills matter. They are in demand. Our world needs them now more than ever. And I thank you. It is also St. Patrick's Day. It is March 17th, 2024, and we celebrate St. Patty's Day across the world. And, you know, even if you're not Irish, this is a holiday you can get into. I'm blessed to have Irish ancestry on my father and mother's side. Both my great-grandfathers and great-great-great-grandfathers were Irishmen married to Black women on my mother's side. And I've told this story many times, but I can't tell it enough. And I'm working on a novel about their lives, a historical novel about Grandpa Henry and Grandma Viney. She was a slave. After the Civil War, they ran off together. They, of course, could not be married in the South because of miscegenation laws. They went to Oklahoma, a border state, and then ultimately to California, where they had 13 children, of which I am one of those descendants through their great-great-great-grandchildren line. And so happy St. Patty's Day to all of you. Whether you're Irish or not, it's great to wear green. I'm certainly an AKA woman, so I love wearing green. No pink today, but we're green. And looking forward to joining Norfolk State University tomorrow in honor of Women's History Month. Congratulations to the lady basketball team at Norfolk State on your championship, back-to-back wins, your second year in a row. We're very proud of you here in the Commonwealth. So thank you for showing up and representing Virginia well and representing your university well. I look forward to being with the Spartans tomorrow and to having a really good time. And we're doing a town hall that I believe is open to the public, the afternoon session, and then a closed morning session with the seniors and the graduate students and getting them ready to go from the college campus to the corporate boardroom. So I'm excited about it. You humble me. All right, let's get to it. So today's podcast, of course, I want to talk about Judge McAfee's decision down in Georgia. Georgia on my mind, Georgia on all of our minds. If you have been living under a rock, you should know that Judge McAfee, Scott McAfee, decided that DA Fani Willis in Georgia could stay on the case prosecuting Donald Trump and other defendants on RICO charges and other charges. But she had to release Nathan Wade. He resigned in what I thought was a very honorable and humble fashion from his position. The judge, I think, was correct in his assessment that there was certainly an appearance of impropriety, which is challenging, right? And we'll get into that in a moment. But I wanted to really talk about this decision from two points of view. One, did the judge make the right call? And secondly, how did we get here? I thought my CNN colleague Jim Acosta nailed it the other day when he had guests on, and actually as the news was breaking and the judge's decision was being released. Jim, you know, asked the question, how is it that I, as an American citizen, talking about himself, but to his panelists, we as citizens know more about Fannie Willis's love life and her spending habits and, you know, where she likes to go get wine, how much cash she uses, than we do about the defendants charged with RICO violations? And look up RICO statutes. Those are used to prosecute mafia members. They were, in fact, Rudy Giuliani is one of the people, interestingly, that made those statutes famous back in New York when he was a DA and a prosecutor and a U.S. attorney. And, you know, he used these statutes to get the mob. And they were charged under these RICO statutes. And I thought Jim's point was very poignant, that we the people still don't really know from a layman's perspective or understand how these things work and what the facts are. We know the basic facts. We know the recording. We've heard it where Trump calls up Brad Raffensperger and says, listen, I need you to find me 11,870 votes or whatever the number was. And it's clear that he is trying to press the Georgia Secretary of State to find him illegal votes, votes that don't exist. The co-conspirators have pled guilty already. Many of them have pled out. And if you're not guilty, folks, you don't plead guilty, because there's no reason to do that, particularly these folks who, you know, have money and resources and can afford a representation. And if you can't, the state provides representation for you. So this argument that I continue to hear that, well, you know, these were false charges, trumped up charges, these are ridiculous charges, no pun intended when I say trumped up charges, it's really ridiculous, folks. And you really, I think, need to go into this 2024 cycle with your eyes wide open about where we are. A couple points. And again, it's Sunday. I'm not going to be long, but I did want to get on and talk about this a little bit. Number one, if you haven't figured out yet that the judiciary is the one that runs this country, you've been missing it. The Article 3 branch, the judiciary, you know, for the federal courts, but the court systems, as you've seen, really do have the final say. And I am not of the belief that we will see a trial brought against former President Donald Trump before the November election. And that's unfortunate. But if you're looking at these cases, one, there's too many of them. You know, I was wondering if they could be combined in some way, the federal cases and brought by Jack Smith under one trial with Judge Chutkan versus all these different trials. Certainly the one in Georgia is a state court criminal, you know, trial. So that's a little bit different. But I don't think we're going to see a trial. And I think that's unfortunate, because I think the people should know before they vote whether or not their duly elected president, should it be Donald Trump, is going to go to jail or not. I also think that Trump's intention is very clear. He stated it, that if he is reelected, he will just simply stall until he gets sworn in and can then take whoever his attorney general is and direct them to get rid of these cases on malicious prosecution grounds or false grounds or whatever they can come up with. So I want you to pay attention to the role the judiciary has. This is a great opportunity, teachers, particularly in high school and college level, to talk to your students about the checks and balances of our system and the powers of Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, the executive, the judiciary, and the Congress, the legislative, because they all have roles, and the judiciary is very powerful. The Supreme Court's going to hear the immunity case. That's going to be delayed. Have no idea what they're going to do, folks. But I do want to talk about Georgia, because as an African-American woman, I have some feelings about this. First and foremost, as I said on CNN the other night, there can be no doubt that Fannie Willis has to take a hard look in the mirror and say, boy, I could have done this differently and I could have done this better. I think there is no question, and the judge made reference to this many times in his order, that this created a real mess of sorts in terms of a prosecutor really needing to be above reproach, whether it was making speeches at historically Black churches, which I'm fine with, because if you grow up in the Black church, if you've spoken in Black churches, and I have on both counts, you know that we talk about race, we talk about civil rights, we talk about our experiences. It's a very comfortable, safe place for us, particularly as Black women, to lament, to talk about what we deal with. So I don't think she did anything wrong, but I understand that when those recordings are played outside of those church walls and put forth to a broader audience, a mostly Caucasian audience that has no idea how Black people live, think, and feel, and what we share in our sacred spaces, then yes, I could see how that would be problematic. And to someone Caucasian looking at this, say, oh, that's racist, or that's, you know, she's being racially divisive or discriminatory. Secondly, I think that the relationship issue is complicated. Having been in a big law firm and saw partners who were dating other partners or associates or secretaries, whatever, they literally had to file like what we call a statement with the HR director. And the reason that a lot of companies require that and a lot of organizations, the government, et cetera, is because you don't want to deal with this. It's disclosure. It simply says, and Fonnie Wills could have done this. They could have put out a statement that, you know, listen, Nathan Wade and I have been friends for X amount of years. We had a dating relationship, but we decided that given that we're going to take on this serious matter, that dating relationship is over. So we're really good friends. We've taken some trips together. And because I don't want to have the appearance that I am doing anything unethical or having some type of financial gain, I paid him back. In my family, we use cash. This is during the COVID crisis, a lot of it. I know we had cash on hand. If you grew up Black in this country or poor white, rural in this country and other races, you know that your grandparents kept money in the coffee can or in the flower pot or wherever it was, because a lot of our grandparents and great grandparents grew up in the Great Depression or were adults during the Great Depression. And they were subject to unbelievable poverty, hunger. The banks lost their money, and it was an awful experience for them. I remember my paternal grandmother talking a lot about her childhood in the Great Depression, and she was very young, being in soup lines. And when she died, she literally had money in the ceiling of her house in a coffee can. And it looked like the squirrels and other creatures had tried to get to it in the home that her father and uncle built. And we found that money and were able to recover it. But it was stunning. For those of us who live in modern times, we just can't fathom hiding money like that. But it was very common. And for a lot of people in this country, particularly people who are poorer or of working class or poor working class, they try to hoard cash. It's real. And it definitely is cultural. There's no doubt about it. And I was glad to see Fonnie Wills' dad talk about that when he testified as well. But to Jim Acosta's point, which I think is one I want to park at for a moment, and that is, why did this happen and how did we get here? Well, again, ethics charges were filed. They were alerted to this dating relationship through the gentleman who testified. I can't remember his name. He was African-American, worked at the firm with Mr. Wade and his partner, and had been released under some cloud. Again, don't remember the allegations, so I don't want to just start shooting from the hip here. But clearly there was some disgruntlement and the gossip began to flow and maybe character assassination. And this lead prosecutor, the young lady who was asking all the questions and who has been the lead on this, got a hold of that information. There were texts, and then here we go. I think that it is very unfortunate. I think that we're going to have to take a long look at privacy in this country, or you're not going to get good people running for public office, running for DA, running for judge, running for Congress, running for the legislature, running for the House, running for the Senate, running for president. I know that I have wanted to put my name on a ballot and did so when I was very young, in my 20s, but had planned to many times throughout the last 30 years of my life. And every time I think about running for office, I stop myself and go, do you really want to do this? Because the moment you do this, not only everything you've ever done, but your family, and we've got some characters in my family who give me pause. There are people who've been engaged in criminal activity. There are people who sold illicit drugs. I haven't done those things, but that doesn't really matter. And when you put your name on a ballot, you're opening up your love life, your private life, your finances. And that has got to be something that we deal with. Because I have a right to know if you're a criminal. I have a right to know if you're a pedophile or a predator or if you have been arrested on a felony. What I don't have the right to know is who you sleep with. I don't have a right to know whether or not you watch porn. I don't have a right to know whether or not you engage in, you go to clubs and you have a wild lifestyle. You don't hurt anybody, but you like to go out and, you know, wild out. I don't have a right to know, you know, how much money you have in the bank and, you know, how much money your parents left you. I don't have a right to know what you did in your past in college, if you smoked pot or not, if you had a misdemeanor with your fraternity brothers like George Bush did because you took a Christmas tree or something like that. Like, that's dumb. I don't need to know that. Do we need to know that you have a DUI and that you've hurt someone? Absolutely. Because those then speak to bigger character issues. I don't have a right to know if two married people have been married for 30 years and in year 10 of their marriage, the wife cheated or the husband cheated and had an affair and even had a child outside of that marriage. That's none of my business. If you two are still together and you've forgiven each other and you've moved on and you've made the family work for you, good for you. And so what I'm saying is, this judgment, and there's definitely a double standard, because had this been a male prosecutor, does anybody believe we would have put a male prosecutor on trial for who he was dating and who he was taking trips with and said he was getting undue financial gain? No, we did this because this is a Black woman, a very strong, outspoken Black woman going after a former president of the United States who's got all kind of federal indictments and all kind of drama around him, like Pigpen, it swirls continuously. And she opened herself up to this, and we literally watched this circus play out. And that's my problem with Judge McAfee. I never would have allowed this to go into the public domain. I would have had a hearing in my chambers, and I would have looked at the issues and made a decision. But to put this soap opera, this Peyton Place, as I called it, for those of you old enough to remember Peyton Place, on display was disgraceful. And it has caused damage. Do not be deceived. The jury pool is tainted. There's a problem, which is why I think that what the judge said was problematic, because you really tore her down and really said that you even questioned whether she was truthful on the stand. And same with Mr. Wade. And yet you let her stay on the case if she got rid of him, as if that fixed it. I don't think it did. But I think the answer to the question that was asked is, the reason we know about this is because, as we've all seen for the last 4 years plus, Donald Trump gets a pass. He's a rich white man. He posted a $90 million bond. He's got another $500 million bond he's got to post. He gets away with things that those of us who are regular people couldn't do at our workplace. We'd be fired. We'd be forcibly removed. He says things out loud that most of us wouldn't dream of saying out loud. And yet he has thin skin. He can dish it, but he can't take it. I went after him one time on Twitter, as many of you know, and you know, I didn't like him mocking disabled people. I didn't like the attacks on the Gold Star families and the way he degrades people who have mental disabilities. And I called him, quote, retarded, which is a word that when I was coming up in the 80s, go look at Back to the Future, go watch any of your movies. It was a very common word, not meant in a derogatory way towards people with mental disabilities, but it was to describe bad behavior, conduct that was unbecoming, ridiculous behavior. Now we know better. Now we know that you really shouldn't use words like that, because you don't want to hurt kids with autism or with mental disabilities or with social disorders or whatever it is. You don't want to do that. And I called Trump out and called him the R word. And I rightly got some flack for it, because again, not really understanding, as I'm learning and I'm growing, about what words you can use and what words you can't use and what you should say and shouldn't say and how you say it. I don't mind being rebuked. That's okay. But I thought it was funny that MAGA came for me. It was on Fox News. They called my school and they were yelling about it. How could you have someone terrible like this at your university? These are the same people that applaud the man yesterday who talked about bloodbaths, who called immigrants not even people. He said they're not human, they're animals. Calls them vermin. Says they're tainting the blood. Those are Nazi words. Those are hate words. Those demean human beings. There are no illegal people. I'm a center-right conservative. There are no illegal human beings. Stop. I guess the long and short is, we all better buckle up because we're in for a long ride until we get to November. And that long ride is going to include a whole lot more of this. Sideshows, name calling, unkindness, meanness, cruelty, outing people, attacking the Department of Justice, attacking the FBI, attacking our institutions. Why is Fani Willis on trial when Clarence Thomas is allowed to sit in judgment on a case where his wife was one of the January 6 plotters? That's a fact. That is not hyperbole. How is this happening? How have we allowed ourselves, folks, to get here? That's the question I want to leave you with. The answer to the question that Acosta asked is, we're here because the powers that be, the media and others, keep normalizing Donald Trump. And they keep playing this game of clicks and who can get the best ratings, because Trump is always the gift that keeps on giving. And the big risk is that we'll lose what we have. What little civility and decency we have left, it'll be gone. What bit of democracy we have left will be gone. So we better get smart and we better stop, because we are losing good people who want to serve in office, who would be great. I would be great in office because I love people. I love to work hard. I'm a nerd. I love policy stuff. I like to move the ball. I'm interested in reform. I'm interested in how we perfect this union. But I don't know about putting my name on a ballot when I know that every type of sleaze, disgusting, foul thing that I can't even imagine is going to be said about me and or my family or my loved ones. I have young nieces, young women. I don't want them hearing and seeing every mistake I ever made in my life, although I put them all in my book. So I guess, as one of my best friends said, Sophia, you've outed yourself on everything bad you've ever done, which I'm pretty boring. I'm pretty much a Girl Scout, I'll grant you that. But the point is, we've all made mistakes. We're all sinners. I know I'm a big sinner. That's why I need a savior. And I know that I've made bad judgments in my past in relationships and who I dated and who I almost married. And, you know, I know that there were things that I should have done that I didn't, things I should have said that I wish I had. I know that there are youthful things I did that I grimace at now. But that's how you grow. It's how you become better. But who wants to be put on trial? Who wants their love life put on trial? You know, not everybody writes books and writes columns and outs themselves and tells all their business and uses that to help people. I'm one of those people. I made that decision that I could use my mistakes to help other people. But not everybody wants to do that, and not everybody should have to do that. Some things ought to be sacred, and who you date and who you love and who you go to wine country with, and you're going on a trip with the man's mama to meet his mama, and he wants to be a man of his generation and pay for you and treat you, but he can't because you fear you've got to reimburse him. I mean, that's a lot. And I felt really bad for both of those two people who seemed like good people who were trying to date, and it seemed very difficult. And my heart broke for them. This is why you never see me posting pictures of who I date or what I'm doing. It's rare. Sometimes I have. There are some on my Instagram. But I've been very, very, very careful about that, because I've learned that when people know what's going on in my life, other than my friends and my family and the people I trust with my life, people get destructive. People get messy. People start talking. People do stuff. And then you have to think about that innocent person you're dating, the person that you love. I don't want to tear up some good man's life because he's connected to me. That's not right. It's not what I want. It's not what he wants. So you have to just be really careful now, because we have no privacy anymore. And that's really the answer. We don't have privacy anymore. We don't have civility anymore. And that is really my big takeaway from what was decided. I think that on balance, the judge was right with what he said. But I think that if he was going to go where he did on the personal front, like her making those statements about President Biden's mental acuity and his memory, If you're going to exonerate me, but don't attack me on the way out. And if you're going to attack me and say I did something bad, then hold me accountable, remove me, and keep it moving. Judges' job is not to opine on social policy, the culture wars, or campaigns. Their job is to interpret the law, period, full stop, and enforce it through their orders and decisions, period. They're not supposed to have commentary and talk about, you know, this, that, and that, this. That's not their job. And we see the Supreme Court doing it. We see the lower courts doing it. And we see the state courts doing it. It's got to change, folks, or we're going to lose this thing called America. Listen, have a great St. Patty's Day. Happy Women's History Month. We're going to do a show. I'm going to try to record one while I'm at Norfolk State with Dr. Fairfax. Want to talk with her about a number of things in the news relative to women. And thank you for following us and listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye now.